Welcome to Configure It Done, the podcast where SAP leaders share real insights, proven strategies, and stories from front lines of major SAP transformations. Get inspired, get informed, let's get it done.
Welcome back to the Configure It Done podcast. Bethy and I were just talking before. We are really excited to have you back on, Jason. You were actually the first guest that's been on twice. And we were talking before because when you came on exactly 2 years to the day, I think it is, you were talking about SAP Power Networks and the innovative program that you've just been through. You were talking about your four pillars of success and how a program needs to be business-led, having good contracts with SI partners, exec support, and the culture of SAP Power. So that was back then. And I think the market learned a lot. But Bethy and I are excited because we're going to learn today about, hopefully, about the benefits. And then Bethany, you mentioned about AI as well that you wanted to.
Yes. So something, the reason we wanted to interview you again, Jason, is we found that a lot of companies are looking at upgrading to RISE or just starting the journey with S4, but they don't necessarily know why beyond the fact that SAP is telling them to lose support if not. So when I was speaking with you a few weeks ago and you spoke about how you're upgrading to RISE for partly due to the AI capability that you'll get, I was very excited because the market can learn a lot from that too.
Yes, it's been a while. I couldn't believe it. I think the last time we did talk, you were a single man, I think, Jay, was the last time we actually talked.
Not married yet, yeah.
I wasn't married yet, yeah. I was with my partner, but we've got married and I've had a baby since as well.
Congratulations. So yes. But no, I had a great experience last time. So let's get to it.
Perfect. So let's start with the basics then. Bethany, you mentioned around cloud being a hot topic now. Yeah. But Jason, the first question, why is it such a big deal right now?
So I think if you look back over the last few years where we've had COVID come in, impacted and disrupted all of the businesses that take there, there's been a significant shift, I think, in people moving to the cloud. That sits there. They want to be competitive. They want to be able to maximize their cost footprint in that sort of infrastructure landscape. And they want to be able to provide better services to the customer, speed and agility and being able to go to market and so forth. So there's definitely a shift from an industry point of view going down that space. I think if you look at the clear statements that's been coming out of SAP on RISE, that's their direction from a company is becoming that hyperscaler component and being able to provide that RISE infrastructure as a service, if you like, to their customer base. And they're encouraging you to go down that path and providing various incentives that sit there, which I'm sure many of your viewers are aware of. So I think there's that aspect of if you're going to remain on an SAP landscape, you need to have a look and say, well, where is that company going? And does your strategy align to that? And I'm sure there's some people that may not and want to shift from those, but the bulk of the customers will make that move and go down that path. Mm. The next thing you need to have a look at, if you're going to make that shift and decide to go down that path, there's a lot of work in having a look at the value and benefit that sits there. So obviously there's a total cost of ownership of going down that. And for us, we really focused at the start of looking at what that is to go there. But it's also, it's not just the dollar values, it's unlocking, the ability to do greater innovation. And if you want to start leveraging Joule, which I'm sure many of your listeners have heard of or be familiar with at different levels, you need to be on RISE, you need to be on a certain version of S/4HANA to be able to leverage that. And that's predominantly one of our reasons going forward is we want to start leveraging that out of the box and be able to provide that to the business.
So one thing I want to concentrate on, you mentioned obviously you've been through that implementation, you've been on that journey, you've started, you're kind of a mature organization through that journey now. But beyond the kind of business case, and beyond cost, what are some of the true benefits, Jason, that SAP Power Networks have had so far?
Yeah, being in the cloud has really given us the ability to, to control our ability to spin up and spin down environments, to be able to be agile in meeting the business needs. This could be projects that are coming along and allowing us to spin up these that infrastructure in place, the support outcomes and initiatives that the business wants to do. It's also allowing us to, from a cost point of view, being able to use these environments when we need them. So we can spin them down on weekends and at night and really reduce our footprint on that. That's very beneficial to us from a cost point of view, but also just the maintenance and wear and tear for our staff to support and look after that. And then you start to be able to look at scalability, security factors that sit in there. They all start to add up, and our ability to really drive innovation as well, what the business needs to do. And for our industry in the utility space, there's a lot of innovation going on around the whole digital footprint and what's happening within the industry with renewables. And we need to be able to work in parallel with what our customers want, but also what the business internally wants to do in that space. And that's allowed us to have that flexibility to pivot quickly, move up and down when needed, and make those changes at a relatively low cost. The other factor of that is you need to make sure you've got the right monitoring in place and governance in place to ensure that you're got control of what's going on or working well with your partners to do that. Otherwise, you sort of lose the benefits of sitting in the cloud and really maximizing that ability.
That could be a podcast in and of itself, because I know I do a lot of work with utilities customers across Australia, and that's been a big concern for a lot of them is how do we set up the governance to ensure. Yeah. But that's research and conversation rather than a we shouldn't do it because we can't control it. It's simply finding out how.
Yeah, it really is a mindset shift for the organization. We had to go through that as we moved to the cloud and start to have a mindset shift of how do we actually govern them going forward. And it is a change, and it takes a bit of time to get to that level of maturity.
How did you go about establishing your governance strategy? What kind of research did you need to do to figure out where governance will come into place, how to do it properly? How to reduce risk?
Well, there was a lot of research. We had chats to, you know, the obvious parties like Gartner and so forth. We're very active in the utility industry space. So we talk to a lot of other partners in, you know, retail, distribution and so forth in the electricity industry. We also talk to, you know, our key vendors and partners, be it Capgemini or SAP and so forth that we have, and consultants. So you can get a lot of learnings from those. And we started to put those in place, but we also just a bit of trial by error. So, you know, we're very keen to take the steps and learn, you know, learn fast, fail fast, and learn from those and see what works and what's not doing it, and where, you know, we need to focus on certain areas where we're strong in one area, but maybe a bit less mature in another, and then focus on, you know, developing that maturity in that space. So
that makes sense.
We're very keen to trial by error.
I love that mentality, and that's a culture shift in and of itself from the leadership, and then all the way down is fail fast, fail hard, and then you move on. So another area I'm seeing a lot of risk aversion, and there's all this buzz around it, but there's a lot of risk aversion, is companies are looking at moving to S4, they're looking at RISE, and there's a lot of talk about AI, but a lot of leaders are very hesitant to actually take that first step because it means change management, which we'll talk about later. It means culture shifts around AI. So when it comes to how leaders should start thinking about integrating AI into their business, where do they start? Is it better to start with small pilots, or should they take more of a holistic enterprise-wide approach? What would you suggest?
Our experience of what we did was we started doing some pilots and just trying. And I think, to me, there's two parts of AI that sit there. There's one, those that you develop in-house, bespoke and build up, and then there's those AI components that you get from your vendors that come out of the box that they're driving. So we very much early on started to do some pilots, seeing how it works internally and building stuff to explore, learn, build our maturity on that, and had a lot of learnings from those. One of the large learnings for us was everyone's excited to get in and see technically how does this work and what's the flashy shining lights out there. Very quickly we found you need to make sure you've got the right governance, controls, compliance, security in place, because very quickly you start to get down, you know, AI ethics and so forth. And you need to make some hard discussions and decisions around those as to what that means for your industry. For us specifically, we're regarded as critical infrastructure. So from a federal government point of view, we must maintain the bulk of our data on site and can't compute offshore. So for us, looking at AI very quickly, we found that some of the AI initiatives that we're looking at would be processed offshore. So that restricted us in what we can do, and we started to learn that and developing on that. So we very much started in doing POCs. We learned a lot technically from that space, and then we started to say, right, now we've got a level of maturity and understanding and putting that governance framework. You know, then we started to be able to define, right, who owns these from a data point of view, and then started to look more enterprise. So we're going through that strategy at the moment and saying, right, across the organization, what do we want to do in that space? And working very closely with the business as to where we should be focusing in that. And it needs to be business-led. It's not the IT department driving this and saying, look at this shiny thing. It's about where are the pain points and where they get the value out of it.
I was going to say it's such a balancing act, because when I last visited Adelaide, you were talking about how the focus right now is in part to save customers money because we're all using more and more energy. But then you also have to balance AI ethics and make sure that everybody's data is secure. And so balancing it to get the best of both worlds is difficult, I would imagine.
Yeah, there's definitely a strong customer focus from SA Power Networks to make sure we're returning, you know, the best level of service to them, but also minimizing our costs. So that's that engagement and experience that the customer has. Adversely, we're an asset-based company with poles and wires. So we need to make sure that they're in a condition that operates. Otherwise, there's outages that impact. So using AI to help us to look at those assets and determine the life of those assets or conditions that are going to impact them that might cause outages can be very powerful in the AI space to drive that, so that we reduce AR cost of having to maintain and replace, but also the cost for us being able to reduce the impact to customers having outages.
I was going to jump in there, Jason, because SA Power, you're so far ahead, and obviously looking at AI and Joule, and so far ahead in the journey. I felt it was important just to remind some of the listeners where you started that journey as well. You know, was it a greenfield? Did you do a brownfield? Was you on ECC before, or was it another legacy system? Can you just remind the reviewers of where you started that journey? And then I'm going to ask you about some questions around Joule and AI.
Yeah, I think we're moving to RISE in September with our ERP and ISU platforms that we have. We're currently on S/4HANA, and we're currently in the cloud in Azure. So we're probably in a very good position, one of the best positions you want to be in if you're going to be shifting to RISE, if you're not doing a greenfield. And that gave us good stead and a good landscape to make that shift. For us going down the space of looking at Joule, we need to get to RISE to unlock where that is. So our focus at the moment from an AI point of view was in-house, what can we do in developing in, you know, Microsoft frameworks and other stuff that sits there. Yeah. And looking at the LLMs and looking at what's out there and what we want to use. You know, there's the ChatGTP. We've created our own SAP and SA Power Networks one. And we've got that being utilized within the organization at the moment, which has been fantastic because it's got our data in there to be used specifically in a safe, secure environment. So we've built that the business is using and doing that. And we'll continue to leverage that and build on that. So that's an example of us doing a pilot and then implementing a in-house bespoke build that sits there. What I'm really excited from a dual point of view is we're now in that landscape once we get to RISE to be able to unlock that. That said, we are doing some POCs at the moment on SuccessFactors with dual because we have access to that at the moment. We're trialing that and seeing what we can do in that space, what out-of-the-box SAP has available to us in Joule, and then we're using that and talking to the business about what does that look like and so forth. And we'll work with them in due course to say, well, what is our strategic plan across the organization of how we start to roll out some more of this stuff? Because you know, we touched on earlier, change management's a key part of this, and the tech's wonderful, but if it's not used, kind of pointless.
So have you got any examples? You mentioned your AI tool there. Have you got any like day-to-day examples of where the business used that and what are the benefits?
Yeah, the example for our ChatGPT or Sapin one is really, it's got, you know, data in the, you know, AI is as useful as the data that you have.
Yep.
It doesn't go off and think on its own completely. It needs that data to use that as a reference point. So what we've been able to do there is load in the data so that that's very specific to the company, so that people can access that if they want to have information around particular, it might be manuals or information around our assets or information that's around any sort of area within finance and so forth that you can spread across, so that it can ask questions in a natural language and say, can you give me information on XYZ? It's a very user-friendly. It's just like you do with your other chat systems. And because it's very tailored to SA Power Networks data, they're able to save a huge amount of time and access all this information in real time in a natural language environment and refine it. So you can ask it a question. It comes back with information. You can say, yes, but I want to focus on these particular poles of wires, or I want to focus on corrosion. Can you give me information on corrosion for these types of feeders or information? So it can then start to provide you more and more information for you to do decisions, if that makes sense.
When you say natural language, if you explained it to me like I'm five, because I feel like I'm five listening to you talk about some of these things. So do you mean that you're training it to understand how a human would be inputting questions? Because we don't always speak formally when we're chatting to each other. So are you teaching it how to understand natural language, meaning how we speak day to day?
Yeah, so it's you're basically putting in a sentence or statement saying, can you give me information in regards to XYZ that sits there? And it will go away based on key attributes, if you like, or key words that you've included in there, and basically interrogate all the data that it has access to say, well, I think all this information relates to what you're asking for. It will then bring that together and provide it in a very more natural language or a report or a text-based that will give you hopefully what you're looking for, or give it the information to you so that you can then refine it or say, yep, that's what I was after. Or you could ask it, you could cut and paste a section out of a document or minutes that you've had for a meeting, put it in there and say, can you tell me what this actually means? And it can go away and come back to you and say, well, this is all the AER or EMO regulations that you need to know about from this meeting, which you had no idea because you're like, there's all these acronyms. What are we talking about here?
It's the way that it feeds data back to us as well as humans that we can understand it and process it easily. That makes sense. So this is a good segue actually into another thing that we spoke about not too long ago, which is change management. So many of my clients are looking at AI, and again, it's very much a buzzword right now, but they're not sure how to do it, not only because there's some risk aversion, but also because just implementing the change management can be so difficult, making sure that your staff are utilizing it properly. It takes repeating things so many times and really infiltrating the culture with it. So in your experience, how does the way that SA Power Networks handles change management really set you apart? Are there things that you've learned that are really, really effective in terms of change?
Yeah, change is really, for me, it's really important about what we do. Working in IT, you know, we get to see, you know, wonderful technology and be able to do wonderful things that sit there, but they're only as useful as being used. You know, it's the old field of dreams statement. You know, if you build it, will they come? Well, not in the tech space. This doesn't always work. And there's some, you know, classic stories we could probably talk in another podcast about that. So I think there's probably three things that sort of come to my mind when we look at change. One of them is around embedding change from day one. So if you're doing a project, a program, or whatever it's going to be, I don't treat change management as a line item in a Gantt chart and say, well, it's going to start at this point and end at this hard fix, and there we've got that skill. It's about incorporating that through the whole process. They need to be at the start understanding and providing direction of the importance of change going through. That's really key, and I think sometimes that's lost on key projects that you do. that you bring them in 2/3 into the project or 1/3 into the project, and a lot of the groundwork's already been set up and you're chasing. That's the physical doing and having in there. I think there's a mentality side, and change needs to be business led. So you don't want IT saying, well, this is a change and this is how we're going to drive it and this is how I'm going to teach you. And it needs to be business led. So you need them wanting this change and asking for it. They're trying to get an outcome and being part of that whole change process so that they have a clear input to it and driving what they want to do, because it's much easier for the business to be pulling these changes rather than, you know, we're pushing it onto them. That's half the battle. It's a massive impact and saves you so much headache throughout the course of the program that you're on. And then probably the last one I'd be saying is around focusing on, you know, not just the delivery aspect, but the adoption. So change management doesn't end on a go live day. We don't, you know, pat each other on the back and go, yep, that's done. Here's the comms that have gone out. It's about saying, right, that has happened. Now we've got a bedding down exercise to go through, an adoption of it. And how do you monitor that? How do you look at success of that and what needs to be done ongoing? And how do you check that later down the path? Project teams may come and go and start to wind up and wind down. But how do you go back and say, hey, you know, we've rolled out Fiori across the organization. What's the adoption like in 6 months, in a year? Are people really using it or not? Or if you've rolled out something in the AI space, is it really being used? Have you got metrics in place to actually measure where that sits in the adoption of what you expected it to be? And then work with the business about why is that?
Yeah, I think I've heard that term from SAP before, when the go live days, almost like day zero. Yes, it's exactly what you're saying there around change. I've got a question around the people while we're on that subject as well. When obviously AI is getting rolled out across the company in mass, like how do you keep them infused? And yeah, how do you keep them? I mean, some people are really like scared and fearful of AI. It is a big change and it's only going to grow. But like, yeah, how do you keep them infused?
Yeah, and there's some myths and whatnot that I was, one of my colleagues, Matt Pritchard, was doing a presentation and he had a slide that sort of resonated with me around, you know, AI is not going to take your job, but people that don't use AI will disappear. And I was like, that's quite interesting. And I think it's one of the, you know, you think of the Terminator movies and they come out and Terminator, whatever next is the 10th one that comes out with Arnold. It's not necessarily, while it's popular at the movies, he comes out and shoots all these people. The biggest impact is an AI coming out that people use and adopt. It could be for payroll processing or change management, that not change management, but supply chain and so forth. That would be the most, it might be the most popular movie, but it'll be the most popular example of AI being used and adoption that sits there. So I think there's a bit of a myth that it's going to have impact. So you need to involve the business through the whole process. Don't surprise them and say, here's this AI that we're going to roll out. Because the reason why you're doing it is it's fixing one of their pain points. So once again, it's them pulling that and saying, yeah, I actually want, you know, in examples in supply chain, you might have stock levels going down where AI can then say to you, hey, you've now reached a certain threshold. Here's the suppliers that have stock at these price points. Do you want me to order it? And it can happen like that for you. So there are examples that can provide you, you know, great service and address one of the pain points for the business that sits there. So if you can involve them through the process, really have the AI addressing pain points for them and then see that. So when you start to roll this out, you know, promote it, talk about it, say, look what we're doing here. So other people see it and say, hey, I want a bit of that. Well, that sounds really good. I want to do that. So, and then you get that momentum coming through and, you know, you really get the business then on board saying, and then they start to think about, oh, can it do this and can it do that? And because a lot of people have different views of what AI is. There's no one set thing. So I think once people start to see it, touch it, feel it, then you start to get an equal playing field of a level of understanding and maturity.
Yeah, okay. So you haven't, obviously you're far into this journey, you haven't seen any changes of roles or SA Power Networks creating new roles or losing roles. Have you seen, is it impacted anything like that? Or no?
I think from a data science, we've got, you know, a lot of data science people and people at the back end that are building and understanding this. There is skill sets that you need some people to understand that. My development teams, for example, and some of the stuff we've been doing in the SAP landscape, they're learning new skills and understanding the AI hub and so forth in SAP and what they can do in those spaces. So there is skills and that people come on board that you can either develop in-house or you may have to hire and bring people in data science space. But I think the people using it, we haven't seen any impacts to staff that sits there. There'll naturally be areas where there's efficiency gains where things are, instead of taking X number of hours, could be minutes. And it really, the organization needs to look at it and says, well, if they've now saved, you know, an hour a day doing this exercise, where can they, you know, drive that? It's not necessarily you're going to get rid of someone. It's a case of, well, now they can actually add more focus, maybe better customer service or whatever it might be that sits there. So, yeah, we're not seeing it as a reduction necessarily of staff.
Brilliant. So Jason, if I can summarize today and, you know, for the listeners and that might be behind on the journey or they might be currently sitting on ECC or about to start that journey, if you could summarize this and summarize the three benefits, what would your message be to them?
On their AI journey?
On the AI journey, yeah, that's right.
I'd probably say three of them would be around try it, don't be scared. Get in there, try, learn fast, fail fast. You won't have all the answers, so get in there and do. I think there's a level of in governance and controls that's important to get in place. I think I see that, and I talk to a lot of other industries and parties around making sure you've got the governance and controls in place and ethics around what you do. And that requires discussions with legal and other bodies, which not necessarily involved in all your type of projects that you do in IT that sits there. That's important because those will have an impact on your timelines and ability to deploy. And then lastly, involve the business. Get the business driving the AI of what they need. Don't get it as an IT-led. It is very tempting to do that. It's very technical-driven, and there's a lot of work that needs to happen on the back end to that happen. And IT departments and technical people can get very caught up in that. But it's very important that you go, right, you've got a level of maturity and infrastructure and whatnot in place. Right, now's the right time to engage the business, educate, and bring them on the journey to say, right, how do they adopt and where do they want to see that? And make it a really collective point of view. And as I touched on earlier in our discussion, and you know, life's so much easier when they're pulling change rather than having to push.
Excellent.
Absolutely.
Jason, I'm sure Bethany would agree. I think we'll put a note in the calendar for 2 years' time again and get you on for the hat trick. yeah, you always speak so well. And yeah, like I said, it's a massive help for other customers out there looking to start the journey. So Bethany, thank you for organizing this. And Jason, thank you for coming on again. We really appreciate it.
No, I appreciate it, guys. Thank you very much for that. And always enjoy having a chat to you too. And I think, you know, well done on doing these podcasts. I find them very informative and watch them all the time. So thank you very much.
Excellent. Thank you. Love it. Until next time.
Yeah.
See you guys.